Good morning, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and call to order the Senate Committee on Judiciary. Before we get started with our proceedings today, I'm going to ask everyone in the room to give us a moment of silence. Unfortunately, we had a tragedy in our colleagues' families. Herman Berkshire's wife was tragically killed this weekend in a pedestrian motor vehicle accident. Lita Berkshire was his wife, and so at this point I'm going to ask everyone to just give us a moment of silence so we can reflect. This is the first time we've been able to get together. Thank you. All right, what I'd like to do at this point is just kind of give everyone an overview of what we're doing today. We have three bills that we'll be taking testimony on. I'm going to ask that everyone remember a couple of things. Number one, we are all Argonians. I hope and wish that everyone today will respect each other's viewpoints. It may differ from your own, but everyone has the right to come to this Capitol and give their perspective of what they think we should or shouldn't do regarding bills. We will be hearing from first the governor, then we will have two panels for proponents, one for each of the two bills, which is Senate Bill 797 and Senate Bill 868. There will not be a special panel for Senate Bill 764. After we have those panels, and each of those individual panels will have 10 minutes to speak as an entirety, and we will be using the timer as you can see. After that, we will have a designated panel for opponents. I've just informed them that instead of having just 7 minutes, because we have the second panel, that they will have also 10 minutes to spend between themselves, even though there are only two members there. All others that are going to be giving testimony today will be limited to 2 minutes. You should be giving your testimony on any of the three bills and any combination that you'd like. We will not be having testimony independently of each of the bills. There will be testimony come in all at the same time. I ask that if you've handed in written material that has been submitted for the record, you do not need to read that language into the proceeding. It's already part of it. What we ask that you do is summarize and highlight those points and or speak from your heart as to why you think bill should go forward or why it shouldn't or what criticism you may have regarding the components of it. And again, I hope that all of us will remember that as Oregonians, everyone should respect each other's rights. And my goal today is to try to have as equal number of people testify on each side of the issues based on the numbers. We will be taking testimony until 10 o'clock this morning. And then at that point, as we said in the notice on the agenda, we are taking written testimony, I believe, till 5 p.m. today. So if you do not get an opportunity to actually speak, you can hand in your testimony or you can send it in by email before 5 o'clock, and it will be part of the official record. So with that, let's go ahead and get started. I'm going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 764, 797, and 868. Governor? Good morning.
Senator Przyjanski and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today about Senate Bill 797 and Senate Bill 868. These bills focus on ensuring that people who should not have guns because of prior convictions, a violent past, or in instances of extreme mental crisis do not have easy access to firearms. Gun violence devastates families and households throughout Oregon, tearing apart the very fabric of our communities. I have met with some of the families of the UCC 9. Nine Oregonians shot and killed when a student walked into a classroom at Umpqua Community College and began firing. I will never forget that day. And I vowed I would do whatever I could to make sure it never happens again. While we vividly remember tragic events like those at UCC and the Clackamas Town Center, all too commonly, gun violence is also perpetrated behind closed doors. The deadly combination of guns and domestic violence is well documented. The very presence of a firearm in a domestic violence situation makes it 5 times more likely that a woman will be shot and killed. 9 women a week are killed in the United States of America from their domestic partners. 9 women a week. And though the majority of these horrific tragedies happens behind closed doors, the tragedy in San Bernardino last week, when a shooter gunned down his wife at a school, injuring and killing 2 students, shows that a domestic abuser with access to a firearm poses a broader threat to public safety as well. And today, a Gresham mother and family is grieving the loss of 8-year-old Janet and 11-year-old Jasmine Duran Cortinas, who were kidnapped, shot, and killed by their father, who had a record of domestic abuse. I cannot imagine the heartache the family is going through, and I extend my sincere condolences. This is absolutely unacceptable. In Oregon, we can do better. Violence answers nothing, offers nothing, solves nothing. We know that even if the trigger is never pulled in domestic violence situations, abusers use guns to threaten and control their partners. This must stop. Instead of reaching for weapons, we must reach for answers. Senate Bill 797 is just that. It is a common sense, life-saving bill that will help protect Oregon's women and children by closing the boyfriend loophole, preventing convicted stalkers from buying or possessing guns, and keeping guns out of the wrong hands by closing the Charleston loophole. The bill also makes technical changes to allow better enforcement of our existing background check system. This makes sure law enforcement officials are aware when criminals try and fail to buy guns illegally. We must ensure that the right information is making it into our systems from a court order to our Oregon State Police. I want to say thank you to Senators Burdick and Boquist for their bipartisan approach to the extreme risk protection order codified in Senate Bill 868. Requiring an expedited judicial hearing is the best way to ensure that a person who is at risk of harming themselves or others is identified while still ensuring their rights are protected by court review. Persons in crisis should not have easy access to firearms. This bill is another tool in the fight against gun violence and suicide prevention that will make Oregon a safer place to live. I also appreciate the leadership of Majority Leader Jennifer Williamson and your chair, Senator Floyd Przyzanski. Thanks to the determined commitment of this legislature to keep Oregonians safe, as well as the collective advocacy of local organizers, outspoken survivors, and the law enforcement community, we can take decisive steps towards keeping guns out of the wrong hands. I and Oregonians throughout the state urge you to pass both Senate Bill 797 and 868. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for the governor? Governor, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
We're going to go ahead and call up our first invited panel. This would be Senator Burdick, Senator Boquist, and Senator and Rod Underhill, District Attorney for Multnomah County. And it looks like one of our individuals.
Council.
So it looks like we have one of the members of your panel running late. I just got a note. So why don't we do this? I'm going to ask Senator Burdick, since she's supposed to be here in 5 minutes, we can go ahead and start with this, or if you want to step back, Senator Boquist, we can do the second panel.
You're on a time schedule. Let's go, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry.
You're on a time schedule. Let's go.
All right. Let's go ahead.
Lead, follow, get out of the way.
Yeah.
For the record, my name is Brian Boquist. I represent Senate District 12. I chair the Veterans and Emergency Preparedness Committee. And I also, in 2003, which I'm going to come back to, was the Deputy Commanding Officer and Chief of Staff in the Sandbox. It is my unit, unfortunately, became the poster children coming back from Iraq with the first murder, suicide, and suicide upon that redeployment. Unfortunately, the military's answer was a set of PowerPoint slides, death by PowerPoint, utterly useless crap, and it didn't work. Hasn't worked to this day. Unfortunately, just last Thursday in my own committee on Veterans Emergency Preparedness on this issue of suicide and police intervention and how to deal with it, the answer is a set of PowerPoint slides. So from 2003 to now, we haven't made very much progress. I do want to reference, as you said, Mr. Chair, on OLIS, you'll find a whole series of information that we have put forth that's been before my own committee, including suicide documentation, various reports from the state of Oregon, so people can look at them. And when both sides say that's the wrong quote, I'm sorry, it's the quote from the documentation we have that's on OLIS. There are approximately 40,000 suicides in a year in America. There's over 700 in Oregon. It's the second leading cause of death of youth. And we are one of the top military and veteran suicide states in the nation, unfortunately. A very similar bill to this passed by the Washington voters a couple years ago by 70% of the vote. We looked at that bill because we started out down the road, Senator Burdick and I, looking on how do we intervene with immediate families. I'm going to go back to immediate families in a few minutes because it's important to understand what an immediate family is, because the typical red herrings that get thrown out there don't exist in this bill. The important point about the Washington bill, though, is as we looked at this not particularly as a mental health bill because of adjudication reasons, but as an intervention bill for the immediate family to be able to have an opportunity to prevent a suicide inside a family unit that lived together in the same household. Kind of a quick overview, simple overview of what this bill does and does not, and I'm not going to go into it line by line. Good counsel to my right is going to do that. But there are some things you typically hear and I've seen in my email traffic that you've seen too that I just need to correct for the record. This particular type of order and the family order like it have been around for 20 years, been adjudicated in all the way to the Supreme Courts, and is constitutional. If there's anyone in this room besides the Sergeant Major and I have been on the front lines of this thing, it's easy to wave your book around. It's quite another that you have to realize that when the Supreme Court and other people say it's constitutional, that's the law of the land too. The second thing you're going to hear is the whole issue of due process. The only real argument in the due process procedure that we have is, do you pick at the beginning in an ex parte hearing the preponderance of evidence or clear and convincing evidence? We tried to put an outline in there that laid out to the judge the various types of things that they should consider that would make it almost indistinguishable between the two. There can still be an argument on the clear and convincing and the ex parte, but what is definitely in is in the hearing process between the respondent into the courtroom is clear and convincing, which is stronger than most of the other states that exist right now. The typical red herring that gets thrown out is my evil ex-wife or evil mother-in-law are going to drag me into a court and say X, Y, Z. That's not true in this case either. This has been whittled down so it is immediate family members living in the same household. Now, if you happen to be living with your ex-wife, you have your own problems. This bill isn't going to solve it. And if you're living with your mother-in-law, you have your own problems, and certainly this bill's not going to solve that. The second thing, another issue that really comes up is people say this is a mental health care issue. Let me just point out something. The reason we didn't go down that road is that if you go into a judge and have a mental health care professional present to the judge that this is a mental health issue in the beginning, you lose your gun rights. End of subject, federal law, United States Code. We didn't want to do that. What we're looking about is immediate intervention to prevent suicide and immediate risk. That's why we didn't take that course of action. The interesting thing is it does not solve the issue that we're working on in other committees is what do you do next outside of the family. In our hearing last Thursday, it was very intriguing to listen to a large group of nonprofits and profit hospitals and other organizations tell us that they did not want to provide less expensive mental health care to veterans because it would upset the profit model. Now, I intend to take those people to task in the next 2 days, but that's, again, outside of this committee. Another issue that's come up is unwarranted search and seizure. Let me point out, we tried to clarify in the Dash 1 amendments that in order to do a search and seizure, you have to have a warrant. It didn't exactly come out. We all have been through legislative counsel, and unfortunately, lawyers all have opinions. And so, you know, there is no unwarranted search and seizure here. And in fact, upon issuance of it, we stuck in 24 hours that allows the individual to turn it over to a family member under 941 or to turn it over a federal firearms licensee. So we tried to address that issue too. And lastly, once again, across the board, except for the ex parte hearing, the initial hearing before the judge that is requested is clear and convincing answers. There are two more options later on for both the respondent and the petitioner, who live in the same household still, to request a new hearing to either have the order removed, and it is not an automatic order. It has to be renewed at the end of a one-year period. Now, ironically, you're going to hear some individuals come up here that oppose the opposing because they want it to be more stringent, and they want wider authority for the court. And there are many individuals who come up that say, we need to do something similar to Washington. What we've tried to do is craft something that works here, something that keeps out of the mental health care region, mental health care area to start with. The one thing that I want to close with is that we spent an enormous amount of time. There's no dark of the night, so to the good chair, you know, you can send anybody who said, you know, you held this to the end, they can blame me. They can blame Senator Burdick, because we went to legislative council, and I think within hours of every time we got a draft back, we sat down for 3 or 4 hours. We reached out to both opponents and proponents, asked for input across the board, and resubmitted it back to legislative council. And, Mr. Chair, I believe within the few hours of your committee actually receiving the amendment, it was, in fact, posted on OLIS. So there's no dark of the night secret things that have happened here. What we're trying to do is provide the best course of action that will give families a chance to help themselves prevent their veterans and their other family members from killing themselves, prevent suicide by cop, and worse, killing family members in desperation. The next step after this is to try and expand our outreach and our ability to provide mental health care services. And with that, I will turn it over to my good colleague.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ginny Burdick, and I represent the people of Senate District 18. I cannot improve or add much to the superb presentation that Senator Boquist just gave. We've worked on this with District Attorney Underhill for several months. We've gone through several rounds of comments with gun rights advocates and gun safety advocates. I feel very good about this bill. It is an Oregon bill, and I will just yield the balance of my time to District Attorney Underhill.
Morning. Good morning, Senator Przanski, Chair, and members of the Committee on Senate Judiciary. It is my honor. It has truly been my honor, as commented on, the work that has been put in over the last several months by both Senators Burdick and Boquist. At each point in working with them,
Rod,
as we've...
I need you to put your name on the record, please.
Rod Underhill. I'm sorry. Rod Underhill, Multnomah County's district attorney. Been a member of that office for about 28 years as a prosecutor, 5 years now as an elected official. At each point in working with the two senators, Burdick and Boquist, they have been singular in their efforts, singular in a global desire to help save the lives of Oregonians, and then to do so in a responsible, measured, careful manner and process. They've endeavored to not overreach, while at the same time being consistent in their unified hope to help families, families in crisis, and individuals within families. There is no greater accomplishment for a prosecutor than to, at times, hope and help to prevent violence. Unfortunately, as a prosecutor, oftentimes my job is to respond to violence. In fact, as Governor Brown made her remarks relative to a tragedy that has recently occurred in the Multnomah County and specifically the city of Gresham, it was my, once again, duty to respond to that scene of that tragic event where a man had murdered his two daughters and then turned the firearm upon himself. And I must tell you, the images of those events, the response and the seeing of certain things will leave an indelible mark on any person at any time. And that event does with me as well. So my desire, it began years ago, and relative to this bill, Senate Bill 868, more recently, months ago, it is renewed with vigor and a pressing sense of urgency that we continue to work with family members in our community, offer them services, but also simultaneously allow for law enforcement and family members who are aware that a family member of their own is in crisis, that we allow for a vehicle, a legal vehicle, to dispossess an individual of a deadly weapon. Senate Bill 868 does just that. As remarked on by Senator Boquist, the framework for which 868 is built upon a long-established constitutional methodology found in our Oregon's Family Abuse Prevention Act relative to restraining order issuance, ORS 107700, where we allow for an ex parte application to a court. So make no confusion about this. No one under this bill will be dispossessed of a deadly weapon absent a judicial order. There will be a judicial order issued following a family member or law enforcement based on information that they have available, either provided in affidavit form or in oral statement form to that judicial officer. That judicial officer at that stage will review evidence from a preponderance standpoint. That's that emergency, urgency sense that we need to, in this moment, because of this crisis of this individual, dispossess them of that deadly weapon. Upon that issuance, law enforcement, by and large, will be the ones to serve that order upon the respondent, to carefully, safely, and hopefully appropriately crisis avoidance effort to dispossess that person in crisis of their deadly weapon. Built within this statute, as is in the Family Abuse Prevention Act restraining order, is a due process right, because that individual who's been dispossessed might very well feel that they've been wrongly dispossessed. We have built in this statute that ability to have that hearing, once again, in front of a judicial officer, a right of, if you will, confrontation. The Oregon rules of evidence will apply at that hearing, and that hearing's burden of proof is clear and convincing for that court to continue that order if appropriate, or if inappropriate, to discontinue that order. Once continued, that order will remain in effect from a year upon its issuance, unless or until it is terminated by another opportunity, and Senator Boquist commented on that. The respondent or the petitioner, during that period of a year, even if continued at that initial hearing, may once again revisit that question if the circumstances in their minds have changed. The court would be given another opportunity to make a determination whether that dispossession should remain or whether an alternative should occur and termination is more appropriate. This bill, another piece that the senator pointed out, is this bill provides no greater authority for law enforcement to search or seize than already exists in Oregon jurisprudence. We've attempted to make clear that point, essentially on page 14 of the bill in the dash one, that law enforcement has the authority, if appropriate and if necessary, to seek consent, or if they need to seek judicial authorization to conduct a lawful search of the premise in order to seize any firearm or ammunition or other deadly weapon pursuant to the order. I also want to take at least just a moment to comment on my support for Senate Bill 797, the expansion, if you will, to close that what's been termed the boyfriend loophole. But at times when we use those phrases, I tend to think in my mind that's somewhat casual. What we're really talking about is relationships that have gone terribly tragic oftentimes. Once again, in my profession, I have responded to those crime scenes as well, to incidents where a domestic partner or former, whether it be a husband and wife, or we're closing the loophole relative to an abusive boyfriend oftentimes, abusive partner. It is appropriate for us to expand into that area, to dispossess that individual, again, on the circumstances that I've outlined. And then further, the other provision to continue an order by operation of law and not that if a court has issued an order and it has not otherwise been terminated, that order is in place and continues by operation of law the dispossession of that firearm. And then the closing of the loophole, the other loophole as well. But I want to circle back around to and finish up our remarks. I think we're probably time restrained. Senate Bill 868. It is the right time. It is the right place. The Gresham scenario, I don't know if this piece of legislation would have changed that trajectory, where those two young girls, 8 and 11, and that man who is obviously in crisis were to be alive today. But I am here to say that while we may not be able to change the trajectory of every circumstance, in the business I'm in, I have never been able to place a price tag or an effort or legislation on a human life. I think that it's only going to take one. I don't know which one it'll be that we save their lives, whether it be a homicidal or suicidal ideation, but it's the time and place for Oregon to step forward and do this and move this bill forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Questions for the panel? Thank you very much for coming forward. Our second panel will be, invited panel will be Representative Williamson, Sheriff Reese, and Janine Yuli. I think I said the first name wrong. Jenna, excuse me, it's written down wrong.
Good morning, Chair Prezonsky, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jennifer Williamson. I'm the state representative for House District 36, Northwest and Southwest Portland. I want to first start by thanking you for holding this hearing and to thank everyone who signed up to testify today or submitting testimony and taking part in this conversation. Too often we see horrific carnage caused by mass shootings, attacks in our schools and in our communities. And although they go less reported in the news, we know of countless women and children who have been hurt or killed by an abusive partner with a firearm. We've taken steps over the past few years towards ensuring that dangerous individuals, violent criminals, domestic abusers, don't have easy access to firearms. I want to thank the governor for her leadership on gun safety, and I want to thank Senator Burdick and Boquist for all their hard work on Senate Bill 868. We know that families and law enforcement currently lack the tools to help at-risk firearms owners. This legislation would protect Oregonians from hurting themselves and others during a time of crisis, and I look forward to supporting this bill when it comes to the House. On paper in Oregon, we require that all potential buyers of firearms pass a criminal background check before they can purchase. Except in practice, we have a large loophole that allows folks to purchase a firearm without a background check if that check takes longer than 3 days. It doesn't matter ultimately after 3 days what comes back in that buyer's background. I want to share just a few numbers from the Oregon State Police to help put this bill in perspective. OSP conducts more than a quarter of a million background checks for gun sales per year. Some 94% to 96% of those checks are completed within 5 minutes. Now, I know that you've heard that it takes longer than that. If there are lots of people in the queue, it may take longer, but the actual check takes less than 5 minutes. The other 3% to 6% go into something called the pending status, meaning they've been flagged for further review to determine if a buyer is eligible. An example of this kind of flag is if someone has a restraining order in another state, and the background check officer at OSP must physically go pull the file or call that state to find out whether or not that restraining order is one where that person cannot own a firearm in Oregon. But if this process takes longer than 3 business days, the seller has the discretion to sell the gun anyway. A further look at these numbers are alarming. The denial rate for background checks is 0.073%, so less than 1%. But the denial rate for those who go into the pending status is 5%. In other words, a background check that goes into pending is 5 times more likely to ultimately show that the buyer has something in his or her background that disqualifies them from owning a firearm. The top 3 most common reasons for denial last year were a purchaser having a felony record, being on probation, or in fugitive status. Now, I know that most responsible gun dealers will wait until the background check is fully completed before selling their guns, but not everyone does. We've heard that we need to do more to go after bad guys who try to buy guns when they shouldn't, and this bill gives local law enforcement a better ability to do just that. Senate Bill 797 would also protect vulnerable women by doing two things: closing what's called the stalker loophole by prohibiting the sale of a gun to anyone convicted of stalking, and by closing the boyfriend loophole, which updates the definition of relationship status pertaining to certain kinds of court orders. I believe we owe it to our communities to pass common sense gun laws that keep them safe, and closing these loopholes are the right thing to do, and we'll do just that. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's going to go next?
I will, sir. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It is my pleasure to be here with you today to testify in support of two key pieces of legislation. For the record, I am Multnomah County Sheriff Mike Reese. As a law enforcement executive with more than 25 years of experience, including 4 years as the chief of police for the city of Portland, and now as an elected sheriff, I've seen firsthand the incredible damage communities suffer as a result of irresponsible firearm use. As a result, I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 797 relating to the responsible gun ownership, because it aims to reduce gun violence in the communities law enforcement serve. I'm also here today in support of Senate Bill 868 relating to extreme risk protection orders, because it aims to reduce self-harm among the vulnerable individuals law enforcement strives to protect every day. The proliferation of guns in the hands of dangerous people is the number one threat that law enforcement professionals face daily. Over the last 2 years, approximately 1,700 firearms-related crimes were reported within Multnomah County alone. In domestic violence cases, all too often the victim is a woman terrorized by her partner. Currently, Oregon law rightly prohibits certain domestic abusers from buying or possessing a gun, but more needs to be done to strengthen the current rules. Senate Bill 797 would bring about several important changes to Oregon's gun violence prevention laws, including closing the boyfriend loophole, adding abusive dating partners and convicted stalkers to the list of those prohibited from purchasing or possessing a gun is an important measure that will protect women and children. Simply put, keeping guns out of the hands of abusers is the best way to prevent them from shooting and killing their victims. Senate Bill 797 will also help strengthen our ability to enforce current law. When someone who isn't legally allowed to have a gun tries to buy one and fails a background check because they are a felon, domestic abuser, or have a dangerous mental illness, that's a red flag. And it is also a crime. If you lie when you try to buy a gun, you've broken the law. A coordinated and timely response that alerts local law enforcement when a prohibited person tries and fails to buy a gun is an important way to help us keep the next crime from happening. As a gun owner myself, I support the rights of responsible owners. However, there must be a balance between protecting our rights and taking every step necessary to protect our communities from gun violence. Senate Bill 797 strikes the balance and represents a reasonable and necessary step forward. Senate Bill 868 addresses a gap currently in Oregon law. By recognizing extreme risk protection orders, a court-issued civil order that empowers families and public safety to work together to prevent gun tragedies. Family members are often the first to know when a loved one is in crisis. It's difficult to witness a loved one regress and engage in dangerous behaviors, thus necessary for family to have a meaningful next step when they are concerned about the risk of self-harm or even the potential to hurt others. Though temporary prohibition on the purchase of new or dispossession of existing firearms, Senate Bill 868 gives families and law enforcement officers a valuable tool to intervene in complex and quickly evolving situations such as a mental health crisis. People experiencing crisis may be at an elevated risk of suicide. We know that research shows that people are more likely to die by suicide if they have easy access to a firearm. In fact, 40% of all suicides within Multnomah County involve a firearm. Those in suicidal crisis are much more likely to survive if they don't have easy access to firearms for the duration of the crisis. Law enforcement knows all too well that mental health crisis, which could result in harm to self or others, benefit from time and compassion. Senate Bill 868 creates a moment for clarity and an opportunity to match an individual's need to available services. Closing these collective gaps in the law go a long way toward reducing the incredible damage irresponsible use of guns does to our communities and to vulnerable individuals in need of our assistance, while still preserving due process and other constitutional rights. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning and for your support of these critical measures. Thank you.
Thank you. Jenna?
Good morning, everyone. I would like to thank Chairman Przanski and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee for allowing me to testify today in support of Senate Bill 868, the Extreme Risk Protection Order. For the record, my name is Jenna Yule, and I am the regional manager at Americans for Responsible Solutions, which is the gun violence prevention organization started by former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords. I grew up here in Oregon. Some of you might remember the story of my mom, Cindy Yule, who was shot and killed at the Clackamas Town Center shooting on December 11, 2012. I was 23 years old, and losing my mom was more difficult than I ever could have imagined. 4 years later, I never could have guessed that I would be losing my dad, too. His name was Michael Pasalacqua. I just turned 28 in February, and I have now lost not one, but both of my parents to gun violence. I knew that my dad wasn't doing too well, but I didn't know how to help him. On July 18th, 2016, he went to a gun shop, and he bought a gun. I know that because of the receipt that I later found in the same box that the gun came in that was still under his bed. If I had known that a tool like the Extreme Risk Protective Order was available, I would have used it, and my dad probably wouldn't have been able to go buy a gun that day. An Extreme Risk Protection Order enables families to work with law enforcement to temporarily remove guns and prevent the purchase of new guns by an individual who poses a risk of hurting themselves or others. After my mom was murdered, I kept asking myself, how could this have happened? What could have been done to prevent this? And what could be changed to make sure that the same exact situation doesn't keep happening again and again to other families? Research shows that people experiencing a crisis are much more likely to die by suicide if they have easy access to guns. Nationwide, 60% of all gun deaths are from suicide, and 85% of suicide attempts that involve firearms are fatal. My dad was one of those 85%. His suicide attempt with a gun was fatal. Passing this bill would give families and loved ones an opportunity to reduce the risk of suicide for someone in crisis and provide safer circumstances for them to address the underlying causes of these dangerous behaviors. My dad was a brilliant man who had a hard time being happy in this world, but an ERPO could have saved him. Let's give other families an effective way to do something for their loved ones who they know are struggling. I would like to thank Senator Burdick and Senator Boquist for their leadership in introducing this important bipartisan bill. I know that it will save lives, and I urge the committee to pass this critical piece of legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much for coming forward. Our next invited panel will be Keely Hopkins and Kevin Sterick. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Keely Hopkins. I'm the state liaison for the National Rifle Association. Here today in opposition to Senate Bill 764, 797, and 868. Starting off with Senate Bill 764, while there are some good portions of this bill, the NRA is opposed because of the changes it makes to the competency requirements in order to obtain a CHL in Oregon. Current law allows for the requirement to be met through a variety of means, including through training offered by an online course. This keeps costs low for Oregonians and also accommodates individuals in all parts of the state. The NRA strongly supports firearm safety, education, and training. However, we don't believe that it's our role or the role of the legislature to determine who may enjoy a constitutional right based on how much or what type of training they've received. Every person's situation is different, and citizens are capable of gauging what their needs are and deciding on their method of training. If you're a gun owner, you should own safely and responsibly and practice as often as you can, and gun owners do. The additional requirements under Senate Bill 764 will make it difficult for Oregonians across the state to obtain a CHL and have a firearm with them for self-defense. We have concerns that these requirements will increase the cost of courses, and also concerns about the availability of these courses given the associated range time requirement. We urge you to oppose this bill and maintain the current CHL requirements for Oregon. Senate Bill 797 and the concept of indefinitely delaying firearm purchases has been before the legislature before, and the NRA remains opposed. Firearm ownership and self-defense is an important right, and Oregonians rely on the state to conduct and complete background checks in a timely manner. An indefinite delay in a background check makes it impossible for a person to legally purchase a firearm. The 3-day time period was intentionally designed to provide a safeguard to protect the rights of law-abiding citizens. If there are inefficiencies in this process that are causing delays, then let's find solutions to those problems, not just give up on the state's ability to process these checks in a certain period of time. Lastly, the NRA is also opposed to Senate Bill 868. We do want to thank Senator Boquist for reaching out to us on this bill and for listening and addressing some of our concerns. There have been some improvements to parts of Senate Bill 868 with the proposed amendments, but we still remain concerned about the lack of due process in this bill that takes place at the initial hearing. This bill allows for a protective order to remove your Second Amendment rights, not because of a criminal conviction or a mental health adjudication, but based on third-party allegations using an evidentiary standard that falls far below what's normally required for the removing of fundamental rights. We understand the intent of wanting to prevent people from harming themselves or others. However, if a person's truly dangerous, existing law already provides a variety of mechanisms to deal with this individual, all of which can lead to firearm prohibitions in appropriate cases. This protective order does nothing to deal with the underlying dangerousness, nor does it subject the person to any physical restraint, evaluation, or treatment. This order merely takes away a tool and then continues to leave that person a risk to harm themselves or others without any further intervention. So again, we urge you to oppose Senate Bill 764, 797, and 868. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Kevin?
For the record, my name is Kevin Starr with the Oregon Firearms Federation. Senator Manning, congratulations on your appointment. We oppose all three of these bills. Time does not permit me to elaborate on the many flaws in them, so very briefly, Senate Bill 764 creates conditions to acquire a concealed handgun license that are onerous, unnecessary, and for most people, impossible to comply with. But that was the point, wasn't it? Senate Bill 797 eliminates the right of qualified people to purchase firearms as long as the Oregon State Police cannot or will not do their job. I recently had a student in a gun class who praised the response of the state police after she was denied a firearm because it only took her 8 months to get it straightened out. She thought that was very successful. 95% of the delays, as Representative Williamson just told you, are in error. 95%. This is the kind of fail system that we don't think should be rewarded. As for Senate Bill 868, we think this is kind of a fantasy. The bill allows a person who has not been convicted of a crime to have his rights and possessions stolen at the whim of a politically motivated, unaccountable, and usually unelected bureaucrat. You may recall that Judge Kenneth Walker proclaimed in open court in Multnomah County that no one, not even the police, should be allowed to have guns, and that if he had his way, they would all be put on a barge and dumped in the ocean. So what chance does anyone having their rights taken away have in his court? Furthermore, while purporting to address people who are violent or suicidal, there is not one word in the bill or the amendments that actually addresses violent behavior or offers help for people who are self-destructive. We strongly urge your no vote on all three bills. Thank you.
All right. First, before we take questions, I'm going to give you both opportunity to speak longer if you have other things. Kevin, it sounded like you might have wanted to say more. I tried to get word to you. I don't know if Roger Byer got word that we wanted to extend the time because it turned out there was a second panel that was invited for the second bill. So if you'd like to take a little bit more time, please do so.
Well, I would like to address the CHL requirements that are being changed. I have no idea how those requirements could be complied with under the current law, under the situations that we have now, because frankly, NRA firearms instructors are firearms instructors. They're not trained in the law. They're not, and frankly, although I give classes in Oregon gun laws all the time, most NRA instructors don't do what I do, which is study Oregon gun laws. And Oregon's laws on deadly force, while written in black and white, are often dealt with very differently when you get into court. And so I believe that most firearms instructors would be very, very hesitant, and I believe the NRA discourages their instructors from doing training that includes the law. As for requiring live fire, you know, we have sat in hearings many number of occasions where as firearms training instructors and advocates, we have asked for the opportunity to expand the opportunities to build ranges, and those have been opposed. So while we have shrinking facilities for people to actually train, you are now asking people to have increased requirements at a time when, frankly, you know, in states like Washington, there are no training requirements. And we haven't seen any problems. We haven't seen any issues. There's nothing happening that CHL holders are doing that would indicate that any of this is necessary. And so what we really find is that people's behavior is more a matter of judgment than training. We see a lot of police officers who've had extensive training still make mistakes. So I'm very, very concerned about that because I think it would virtually eliminate the opportunity for someone to actually acquire a CHL.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you all very much for coming forward. That concludes the invited testimony that was requested from the supporters as well as the opponents. At this point, we're going to start our testimony of the public. As I mentioned at the beginning, everyone will be limited to 2 minutes. And please do not read testimony that's already been presented to the committee because it's part of the record already. So with that, the first panel I'm going to call up Alina Pergeane, P-R-E-G-E-A-N, it looks like, Marge Easley, and Elizabeth Caswell. And the way we'll be doing this, we will take a proponent panel and then we'll take an opponent panel. Good morning.
Good morning. Do I state my name?
So whoever would like to start, we just need your name first on the record.
Sorry.
And then you'll have basically 2 minutes. You'll have a cue over on that side.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hi, good morning. My name is Linnea Prejean. I'm here in support of Senate Bill S. 797. I live in Portland. I'm a daughter and volunteer with Moms Demand Action. I grew up in Newtown, Connecticut, part of which you know of as Sandy Hook. And I know from up close and personal the impact gun violence has on a community. I watched my town get shoved into the spotlight. And I had a really close friend from high school who lost his mom that day. My best friend's mom lost a lot of colleagues. It's still very difficult to talk about. And while specifically 797 would not have prevented Newtown, it will take a huge step towards ensuring that that existing gun safety laws are followed. We can do better to help our communities and our neighbors and our children by requiring state and local officials to alert law enforcement when an individual prohibited by law from purchasing a firearm attempts to buy one illegally and fails a background check. Passing this bill will save lives, and it may prevent another community from being consumed by preventable tragedy. No one should ever have to go through that, and I speak from that personally. And thank you for your time.
All right, thank you. Who would like to go next?
For the record, my name is Elizabeth Caswell, and I live in Portland. I'm the mother of two children and a member of Moms Demand Action. In 2013, I was honored as your Oregon Mother of the Year. And in fact, the last time I spoke at the Capitol, I opened your legislative session the week of Mother's Day, and I'm very happy to be back 4 years later. I'm here today in support of SB 797 and 868. I am here on a school morning, a Monday morning. I woke up at 4:30 a.m. I packed a lunch for my daughter for school, and I drove down here in support of this legislation. In my time as Mother of the Year, a focus of my outreach was to domestic violence shelters and supporting the mothers and children there. What I experienced there changed me forever. In my written testimony that has been submitted, I cite statistics regarding the risks and dangers women face in the United States from gun violence. But these statistics do not communicate the fear and terror in the eyes of these mothers in domestic violence shelters who are afraid for their lives and for the lives of their children. These women are afraid that their intimate partner will kill their children in retaliation. We have seen this happen very recently. The mere act of a prohibited and dangerous abuser trying to purchase a firearm is a crime. Notifying the local law enforcement at this point in the process can save mothers' lives. You can help these women by voting yes on SB 797 and 868. It will cover all intimate partners by closing the boyfriend loophole and notifying local law enforcement of the failed attempt to purchase. It will give mothers and their children the protection they deserve. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Prozanski, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Marge Easley. I'm here representing the League of Women Voters of Oregon, and specifically on Senate Bills 797 and 868. The League believes it is the responsibility of government to enact and enforce public safety legislation, which includes the bills that you see before you today. First, on Senate Bill 797, we believe that this provides logical steps to close loopholes to make Oregon's background check system and domestic violence protection system work more fairly, effectively, and efficiently. But I want to emphasize our support for Senate Bill 868. This bill, in our opinion, is a very important one in order to save lives by removing guns temporarily from individuals who clearly demonstrate they are a danger to themselves and others. We believe it will be an invaluable tool for victims of domestic violence, but even more importantly, for suicide prevention. Oregon's suicide rate is among the highest in the nation, is increasing yearly, and is more likely than not to involve a gun. Suicide is an impulsive act by an individual in crisis. Normally, if a gun is present, it is most likely the means and will most likely be fatal. We believe that 868 is a proactive step to reduce the risk of suicide by restricting access to lethal means. We do not believe it is an abridgment of Second Amendment rights because the right to own a gun is not unlimited and does not prohibit reasonable government regulations. It allows for limited time period and due process. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Questions? Ladies, thank you very much. Our next panel is going to be Jim Mashaw, I believe, Philip Watson, and Irene Gilbert. Good morning. Who would ever like to start off?
My name is Phil Watson. I'm here on behalf of the Firearms Policy Coalition, our members and supporters in the state. I believe the CHL issue was already addressed inadequate manner. So I'm going to address the other two bills. Currently, in the state of Oregon, like in many states, a judge can issue an order, protective order, and if he also wants to, he can also issue an order to take a gun from somebody as well. And I believe the other panelists admitted that in their testimony. So if they want to, the judge can issue an order. A law enforcement officer can show up to your door, and if you have a firearm, he can take that firearm from you. Furthermore, the bill, there was some tightrope walking there on Fifth Amendment issues, and they sort of addressed that, and that originally there wasn't enough protections built in. They added a little bit, but obviously it's still lacking, as well as the other bill, the loophole bill, supposedly. Currently, there's no effective real way to appeal these delays in Oregon. A friend of mine just recently got delayed for more than 2 months. There's no effective way for him to appeal that. So right now, the current law in Oregon is really lacking on behalf of protecting the individual right to keep and bear arms. And I'd like to see that expanded, not limited. There are reasonable ways to commit people, to address people that are dangerous, and we're willing to talk to you about that. But further limiting people's right to keep and bear arms with no appeals process built in for those protections is very troublesome. Thank you.
Right. Before we take more testimony, I just want to let the next panel know so we have people in another room. Arlene, I didn't know you're in another room. So the next panel that will be speaking after this one is Allison Seymour, Charles McKenna, and Doreen Dodgen McGee, I believe. All right. So that will be our next panel, but please continue.
Hey, Irene Gilbert, I drove 12 hours to spend my 2 minutes in front of this committee, so I hope you read the testimony that I've submitted. Senator Prozanski and the rest of the committee, thank you for hearing from me. I'm speaking in opposition to all three bills. Senate Bill 764, I think that requiring a instructor to have 25 rounds of live ammunition when they may not have access to a gun range is unreasonable. Personally, I would not want to have 25 people with live ammunition in a classroom that I was teaching. I think it will discourage people from providing these very valuable classes, and so I'm concerned about that. I'm also concerned in that bill with 166.173, which says a city or county may adopt ordinance to restrict or prohibit possession of loaded firearms in public places. And if you look at the definition of public places, it is very much an attack on Second Amendment rights. As far as 797, we processed over 600 gun sales last year, and we had roughly 12 of those that were delayed. None of those delays ended up with being denied. So if there were a denial, I trust that the police would go and get those guns from the people. I need more time. 868 gives me great concern because you're talking about people who have mental health issues, and there's nowhere in this that is requiring any kind of statement from a mental health professional, a psychologist, psychiatrist, anyone like that, to justify taking away people's guns. And the use of the term temporary is really not accurate in my mind, because when these people are accused of this, they can't have a gun for 5 years after the end of their period of restriction. I'm also concerned about how they're taking care of people's guns when they're in police custody, because usually they will not get them back in the same condition that they gave them. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim?
My name is Jim Mitchell, retired law enforcement, NRA firearms instructor, police firearms instructor, and several other credentials that go with that. I have problems with all three bills. I'm opposed to all three bills. As a law enforcement officer, I was able to make a police officer's mental hold on people who appeared to be a danger to themselves or other people's. Not once in my entire law enforcement career were those people even held for the full 72 hours. They were released. In our own personal case, we had a case with my mother-in-law not too long ago. The judge's exact words, well, she may not know now what she did 5 minutes ago, but 5 minutes ago, she knew exactly what she was doing. I do not award your conservatorship. We now are facing $20-some thousand in IRS bills because the court said she was perfectly competent, but she wasn't, according to the IRS. We took her guns out of her house ourselves. She was not a danger to herself or anyone else. As far as the firearms instruction and 25 live rounds, we have a family farm, 300 acres, 75 acres of it's non-tillable. A year or two ago, this very body took away our right to put a firearms range there for training. These are bills that are aimed at preventing the ownership of firearms. And that's about all you can say for them. They need work. Mental health issues are a problem. Yamhill County had one of those problems. A person was taken in, a danger to herself. The mental health people released her from the hospital, told them to take her to jail, and she hung herself with a telephone cord. Until we get the mental health people on board, this bill is worthless.
Thank you very much. Any questions? All right, our next panel, as I mentioned, is Allison Seymour, Doreen Dodgen McGee, and I believe it was Charles McKenna. While they're coming up, our next panel that's going to be up after this one will be Bozeb Beckwith, Ronnie Daniels, and John Woods. Who'd like to start?
Chair Prozanski, Vice Chair Thatcher, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today. My name is Allison Seymour. I'm a registered nurse, and my professional practice is in medical telemetry here at Salem Health. I apologize, I'm still in my scrubs. I got off work at 7:30 this morning. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Nurses Association, representing over 14,000 nurses in our state, in various fields across our state. I'm here to support these bills. My full testimony has been submitted to the committee, so I'm going to make a couple of side other notes. I specifically am in support of helping reduce suicide rates. Suicide rates for males are highest among men over 75. This directly affects my patient population. A couple of months ago, I had a patient. He's stricken with diabetes. He's frustrated with complications of his illness. He has lost toes. He can't participate in things that he used to care for. He mentions to me, I have a gun at home. Before I came into the hospital, I was going to use it. I spoke with his family and told them what he told me, and they removed the gun from their home. I'm thankful that I was in that opportunity where we could intervene. This was a pivotal point where we prevented a suicide attempt. That is why I support this bill. Family members are there. They hear things, and we need to support family members when we can. I also would like to mention that we frequently on my unit, because we have heart monitors, we frequently deal with mental health holds and the 72 hour holds, and these suicide holds are very stringent, and yes, our mental health system is strapped, so we need to support this issue from multiple angles. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Good morning, Senator Prozanski and members of the committee. My name is Charlie McKenna. I live in Eugene in Senator Prozanski's district. I'm the local lead for Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America in Eugene, even though I'm not a mother. You know, I worked with you and and the governor in 2015 to pass the comprehensive background check law. That law, how we know, has saved lives in Oregon. Senate Bill 797, which I'm testifying in support of today, will enhance that law and make it an even better law and save even more Oregonians' lives. We have a gun epidemic in our nation, in our state, and we need to do things to keep the guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have guns. There is almost universal agreement amongst Oregonians, hundreds of whom I talk to every month in my capacity with Moms, that all agree Guns should not be in the hands of dangerous people. This law, this bill, if it becomes law, will help strengthen our already existing laws to keep that from happening. It will also protect the most vulnerable members of our community, women who are subject to domestic abuse, who've been stalked. It will also allow local law enforcement a much better opportunity to apprehend those who have committed a crime by trying to buy a gun, even though they're legally prohibited from having a gun. Thank you very much. I'll submit a written testimony to you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Senator Przanski, and thank you, committee members, for hearing my testimony. My name is Dr. Doreen Dodgen-McGee, and I'm a Tualatin resident, and I am a psychologist in private practice in Portland, and I was an auntie. 22 years ago, however, my sister-in-law, Laura, and my three nieces, aged 6 years, Rachel was 3 years old, and April was 6 months old, were shot at point-blank range and killed by her husband, their father, my brother-in-law, in rural Scotts Mills, Oregon. My mother-in-law witnessed the murders and was shot while trying to protect my three-year-old niece and lived with unspeakable trauma for the rest of her life. I became her caregiver the day of the murders and was with her in the months and years that followed. The murders occurred on my eldest niece's first day of kindergarten. My brother-in-law easily purchased the shotgun that morning, even though there was a restraining order against him. I believe that he was acting impulsively and from a place of great anger and pain. I also believe that had there been common sense checks in place, slowing down his impulsive purchase, that I might have celebrated my youngest niece April's 22nd birthday last week. In the years since my family was killed, Oregon has passed legislation requiring background checks, which might have prevented our loss. Our state and country, however, have a long way to go to make sure that guns are not accessible to those who wish to turn them on humans. The reality is that easy access to guns without adequate screening is a dangerous combination. And in an average month in America right now, 50 women are shot to death by a current or former partner. Politics should never be more important than people, and because of the mass murder in my own family, I will never be able to stop pushing to make people safer. Politics aside, common sense gun safety regulations save people. I implore all Oregon representatives and senators to care for the welfare of our population by passing these bills. I have joined with Moms Demand Action, and I hope that we all can protect our wonderful and unique state by protecting the people in them by passing Senate Bill 797 and 868.
Thank you very much. Questions? Thank you very much for coming forward. As I mentioned, Bozab Beckwith, Ronnie Daniels, and John Woods are our next panel. The next panel after that will be Lou Jaffe, Lisa Bates, and Tom O'Connor.
Go ahead. You go. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen. Whoever would like to start, if you'll give us your name before your testimony.
My name is Ronnie Daniels, and I'm from Polk County. I see Mr. Manning and everybody else, Przanski. Three questions on 868. Number one, I keep hearing about Charleston loophole. Number one. Number two, my stepmom was four football fields away from the shooting that happened. The fact on that situation of the shooting, he was a working person. You never know when a person's going to snap. And he was a psychologist for children. The Dylan Roof loophole, Charleston loophole deal, I keep hearing and hearing and hearing. When you don't hear the full story on it, is this. Number one, it was already done to gone to the background check to Washington, D.C. They made a mistake. Number two, he was a person that was charged but not convicted of a drug offense. So let's end that crap right there. The mental health issues are not accountable on 868. Number four, I feel like that the due process, if on a restraining order, the average restraining order for a common person like myself who have seen various issues on this is $1,000 to $3,000 per hearing, lawyer's fees. If you're going to go through and accuse them, we can go ahead and, you know, if you want to do this, I would like to have where the state pays for the defense to give the person the best chance to defend his means. I do not support the bill right now as it is. The concealed weapons permit bill, they want with the issues of not having enough shooting ranges. I just went from one in Albany this past weekend. I enjoy it. I like my rights. I'm a law-abiding citizen. At the same time, I think that to put more restraints on the best officials that to provide these service for concealed weapons, which I don't have, which I may have to rush to get because the demeanings of the situation currently, I feel that it's not addressing. And then on the middle bill, 797, I just think it's a good direction to a degree, but it's not well enough. I'm done with it. I think, and last thing, how come these bills that I see last minute, as you say, from the committees, says that there's no sponsorship, says from the House. I want to know names, or the Senate. I want to know names who present these bills. I want the backing of it.
Mr.
Thank
Daniels,
you.
Thank you. Who'd like to go next?
Go ahead.
My name is John Woods. I know a lot of you because we've been running the veterans bills trying to get the Purple Heart and the Wounded Warriors through. So Chairman Prusansky, Vice Chairman Thatcher, and Senator. SB 797 is a foolish attempt to use the Oregon background check system to control the purchase of firearms. The background check is a broken system where Oregon and the federal government use a different set of rules to do a background check to purchase a firearm. I have personally seen the system do a clean background check on a person and in 20 minutes fail the same person for a 15-year-old alcohol use misdemeanor. He was passed for a 15-round handgun and delayed on a two-shot over and under skeet shotgun. The system has delayed a concealed carry holder 8 months, then passed him all of a sudden for no reason. He all of a sudden got it. Does that make any sense to you? You have the person's photo, you have the fingerprints, you have the CHL background check, and still there are delays and denials. A broken, poorly implemented background check system is a very shaky foundation to base a law on. I haven't heard of any proposals to fix the system. All we see is political grandstanding by the governor and the gun control groups. The stated policy of this law is even if there's a mistake in the background check, a person has no recourse to address it, has no way to clear their name. That part of this bill crashes directly into the presumption of innocent until proven guilty. We have been asking you to fix the system. The response I get down here is, we have no money. In the 7 years that we have been in Oregon, this hearing event has been an epic failure.
All right, thank you. What was that?
My name is Bozeb Bun Beckwith, and I'm speaking today as a private citizen. I am not speaking today as the chair of the Gun Owners Caucus of the Democratic Party of Oregon, nor as an executive committee member of the Democratic Party of Oregon. May I begin? Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I rise today in opposition of bills SB 868, SB 797, and SB 764 as amended. I'm a big D Democrat. I'm a PCP and a neighborhood leader. I work to get Democrats elected. When I first became a member of the DPO's Gun Owners Caucus, I bought one of our bumper stickers. The bumper sticker has a simple line on it. It says, "Democrats don't want your guns. We've got our own." I love that line. It's great. It's simple. It's to the point. I have since peeled that bumper sticker off my car. When I read SB 868, I realized I can't keep it on there anymore. This bill makes my bumper sticker completely false. I know I'm only one voice, and I know I may have jeopardized my position in the Democratic Party by speaking here today, and I know I might be labeled as a crazy gun guy, but I'm not. I'm just a guy. I'm a guy who took a shift off work to come down to Salem to try to break through this space between us in 2 minutes to help members of this committee see this bill for what it is, a bill that takes our guns away. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I ask you to oppose this bill. As I said, I'm a Democrat, and I will still work hard to get Democrats elected. But the kind of Democrats I would like to get elected are those that agree with the DPO's resolution of, I quote, the Democratic Party of Oregon resolves to recognize and support the right to keep and bear arms of Article 1, Section 27 of the Oregon State Constitution and the Second Amendment as an individual right not granted by the government, but rather guaranteed by the government, end quote. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for coming forward.
Any questions?
Yeah, question.
Yeah, real quick. I think, John, you had submitted testimony, and Ronnie, you spoke to it about the full story, what happened with Dylann Roof, and where I had not heard that there was a mix-up.
Just go.
Where is that
Washington Time, Washington Post, various newspapers have addressed it after the fact. The three things that was not talked about on this, and I'm tired of it being brought up, is that it has gone through a process. He was arrested for he was not charged for a drug possession, which should, if it would have came up, I'm sure it would have been a warning sign. The federal government at the FBI did not do their job. They derelicted their dang duties, and at the same time, we pay a tax rate. We're short on money to do the stuff we got. I feel that, you know, not just only, it's all written on there, and it talks about it. And the shooting, like I said, the shooting right 4 football fields away from my stepmom of a guy who shot his girlfriend at that North Park Elementary School, which is right in my backyard, here. And I feel that I grew up in.
Mr. Daniels.
And that's all I'm saying about it. Thank you.
Thank you for that's it. All right, gentlemen, thank you very much for coming forward. Our next panel, as I mentioned, is Lou Jaffe, Lisa Bates, Tom O'Connor. Our next panel after that will be Gary Weiss, Frank Martin, and Ted Campbell. Who'd like to get started?
I guess I will. Chair Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Tom O'Connor. I'm retired and live in Clackamas County. I'm here as a lifelong gun owner to support Senate Bill 868 and Senate Bill 797. I'm a member of Gun Owners for Responsible Ownership and an advisory committee member of the Oregon Coalition for Common Sense. We believe that with rights come responsibilities, and we support common sense measures to reduce gun violence. Extreme risk protective orders established in Senate Bill 868 create a tool for family members and household members to petition the court to temporarily remove firearms and prevent the purchase of new guns by individuals who pose a risk to themselves or the community. Many of us as gun owners have experienced the need to remove firearms from easy access by aging relatives or troubled youth. If necessary, an extreme risk protective order helps provide a legal process to do that using a civil court order issued by a judge after hearing evidence of need. I believe the legal process established in this legislation achieves a fair balance between the rights of gun owners and the rights of family members and the community to be safe from gun violence. I also support Senate Bill 797 to give law enforcement the necessary time to complete a background check without an artificial deadline, and also the measures to deal with abusive partners and stalkers. Again, this seems to be a common sense approach that will reduce the chances that firearms will be illegally obtained by felons, domestic abusers, or the dangerously mentally ill. I do not believe that it imposes an undue burden on me as a gun owner. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I urge your support of Senate Bill 868 and Senate Bill 797.
Thank you. Who's next?
Chairman Przanski and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lou Jaffe. I'm a native Oregonian, a Vietnam veteran, a board member of Gun Owners for Responsible Ownership, and most recently was president of the organization that built the Oregon World War II Memorial on our Capitol grounds. Good morning, and thank you for allowing me to testify today in support of Senate Bill 868, the Extreme Risk Protection Order. I support this bill because I believe it's balanced, I believe it's pragmatic, and I believe it will save lives in each of your respective districts. As I'm sure you're undoubtedly aware, every day in Oregon, more than one person is killed by gun violence, and over 80% of those are suicides. The Extreme Risk Protection Order will go a long way to reducing those deaths from gun violence. I have some comments on the mechanics of the bill. They're in my written testimony, so I'll skip that. You've heard a lot about that. But considering that less than one-third of Oregon households own one or more guns, this seems like just a no-brainer to me. But you will hear, you have heard, and you will continue to hear testimony that will say that these bills will seriously erode one's Second Amendment rights that are thought to be inviolate. When you consider that testimony, I urge you to consider the language of the late Justice Scalia's 2008 Heller opinion, wherein he wrote, and I quote, "Like most rights, the right secured by the Second Amendment is not unlimited," end quote. Writing further, and I quote, "Nothing in our opinion should be taken to cast doubt on long-standing prohibitions on the possession of firearms by felons and the mentally ill," end quote. You know, a common thread in many shootings is that family members of the shooters have seen their loved ones in crisis and exerting dangerous behaviors, and they're in a position to do something about this before violence actually occurs. Accordingly, members are often the first to know if a loved one is in crisis. Senate Bill 868 will provide families and loved ones an opportunity to reduce the risk of suicide or other forms of gun violence for a family member who is in crisis.
All right. Thank you. Time's up. Lisa?
Hi. My name is Lisa Bates, and I'm currently the principal at Levi Anderson Learning Center in Beaverton, Oregon, which is a level 5 treatment facility, and we treat young men from all over the state of Oregon. In addition, I have an LCSW, and I'm a trained suicide prevention trainer and assist. I've worked in mental health and suicide prevention for over 20 years. I'm here today to testify in favor of SB 868 because I believe it will help prevent suicide and related violence by eliminating the availability of firearms to suicidal or at-risk youth. In our schools, we work with law enforcement, administrators, and mental health to identify at-risk youth and reduce their access to guns. We provide CALM training, which provides counseling on access to lethal means. Suicide is the second leading cause of death in Oregon for kids between the ages of 14 to 24. Suicide-related violence and homicide are closely linked. Suicide remains one of the highest causes of mortality in the adolescent years, and this is very disturbing to me. I urge you to be in support of this bill. I grew up in a domestic violent home, and had I not yelled to my mother to flee with my two brothers, I would not be here to testify to you before you today. Youth will find unhealthy connections such as gangs or potentially develop a plan to kill themselves and potentially others by firearms. Jay, a youth from Salem, lost his best friend to gun violence, and his plan was to shoot the killer in retaliation for the loss of his best friend. Luckily, law enforcement intervened, and Jay is now at our school getting the help that he needs. This bill is based on the long-standing procedures of domestic violence protection orders here in Oregon, which involves both a court hearing and clearly defined due process protection. You never forget the fear of the experience of having a gun pointed at your face. I urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much for coming forward. As I mentioned, our next panel includes Gary Weiss, Frank Martin, Ted Campbell. The next panel after this panel will be Erwin Greenwald, Andy Harris, and Kelly Campbell.
They want me to start. Mr. Chairman, committee, my name is Ted Campbell. I'm here representing myself. Yeah, I've already turned in my stuff, so I hope you'll read it. But I have some points I want to make. No one has mentioned that most of the shootings have been done with illegally purchased or stolen firearms. The laws on the book keep legal people or honest people honest. You're putting more laws on the back of law enforcement that are already there. We have laws for mental health holds and that. We don't need more. Third, there are laws on the books that cover mental health. I'm sorry. We're taking time away from officers doing their jobs right now by putting more laws on there. In schools, a lot of kids don't learn about firearms. NRA has a program that could go into the there, the Eddie Eagle program, which will help teach kids about firearms and how to use them safely and what to do if they find one laying around so there isn't that problem. Doctors put kids on medicine, and then when they get a certain age, they come off the parents' insurance, and they can't take their steroids or whatever it is anymore, and that puts them in a mental health problem. We need to give them help when they're younger, not put them on medicine because the parents don't want to do their job. Most FFL dealers follow the three-day rule, unless they personally know the person. That Jim Jones is a common name out there. It's probably 1,000 of them in Oregon, and one may have a record, and they all go into the background check hold. DOD puts a manual on the internet, tells you how to build a .30-06 or a .38 special pistol with stuff you have in your house. So if they want a gun, they're going to get it. I mean, the internet, you just go out and search for anything. No one's mentioned all the murders that have been done with knives and other weapons. Are we going to confiscate knives or semi-trucks or cars because people use them to commit crimes? And last, most important, the clerks in the courts are not doing a job filing all these things properly or promptly. So it may take 6 months after a person has met done his due diligence and taken the classes if it's a DUI before he gets cleared. So there's a lot of tie up there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Brzezinski, member of the committee, thank you for letting me speak today. My name is Frank Martin. I hail from Gresham. My apartment sits less than two blocks away from the shooting recently in Gresham. I stand opposed of all three measures in principle. I have submitted testimony. Hopefully it's written into the record. On Senate Bill 868, I understand the thoughts of the bill, but it's like pointed out before, the mental health screening is not in the bill at all. And in Multnomah County, and previously mentioned by Kevin Sterrett, if I had that one judge, it would be automatic. There would be no judicial review. He would just say no. And I feel that's unfair under the Fourth Amendment. As far as Senate Bill 764, the new requirements proposed for a concealed carry class is onerous, especially in Multnomah County, since there are very few ranges. And so that's an undue burden. I feel gun owners are now being labeled to reach more higher to get their concealed carry licenses. And I'll specifically go after Senate Bill 797. I understand the purpose of the bill, but when we talk about denials, nothing has been said today about possible problems at the Oregon Firearms Unit. Computers have problems. I just recently went through a four-day period of a problem with a computer. And sometimes the databases are not updated. So if a denial comes along and they have to check the ammunition purchases, are you actually creating a de facto ammunition registry here in Oregon that I'm not aware of? These more and more laws being put in place, and I'm hearing the proponents talk about suicides, which I understand are under 868. But if a denial, it's automatically assumed that that person trying to purchase the firearm is a criminal. Until we have the, I propose if you do 797, please do it under a -3 amendment so there is an avenue for an appeal for legal gun owners. And I thank you.
Thank you. Gary?
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Judicial Committee, my name is Gary Wise, Dallas, Oregon. I'm here to today to speak in opposition to 797 and 868. I did want to ask sort of a rhetorical question on the on the concealed handgun license. Who is qualified to teach law on firearms and carry in the state of Oregon, if not an attorney? I understand you can't give a legal opinion for fee unless you are a member of the Bar Association. Senate Bill 797, Article 1, Section 27 of the Oregon Constitution is the only controlling authority on firearms for the state of Oregon. The people shall have the right to bear arms for defense of themselves and the state. Nothing in this language provides for the state police to qualify me or any other citizen to transfer or own a firearm. There is no data to support the need for this legislation. Its only real purpose, in my opinion, is to prohibit the transfer and ownership of a firearm without cause. Not only without cause, but without providing a reason. No constitutional right should be denied without cause and or conviction of a crime. We do not need permission from the government to exercise our constitutional rights. I only want to say one thing about Senate Bill 868. I have a lot of objections, but my primary objection, Senator Brzezinski, is that the respondent or defendant is not entitled to have an attorney present when being questioned by the judge or during any of this process. I support Miranda in every case dealing with law enforcement or dealing with court. You're entitled to an attorney. Thank you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. One second. Any questions? Again, thank you very much for coming forward. Our next panel, as I mentioned, is Aaron Greenwald, Andy Harris, and Kelly Campbell. The next panel after that will be John Dalton, David Wagner, and David Hill. I'd like to go first.
I will. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Aaron Greenwald, and I'm a prosecutor with the Oregon Department of Justice. I'm also the chair of the statewide domestic violence fatality review team and the current past chair of the statewide firearms domestic violence task force. So far this year, Oregon has suffered the loss of 19 people to domestic violence. These deaths have happened in 8 different counties, including Lane, Marion, Klamath, and Multnomah, as we have heard. And of the 19, 14, or 74%, are attributable to firearm use. At this rate, we will far exceed the 37 deaths due to domestic violence that happened last year, 19 of which were attributable to firearm. It must also be noted that access to or possession of firearms by domestic violence perpetrators has been linked to an increase in the severity of abuse in a relationship where domestic violence occurs. I'm here to offer my support in support of 797 generally, but I also want to talk specifically about a Dash 5 amendment that we're expecting. Dash 5 will mandate entry into LEDS, law enforcement data system, of gun dispossession court orders. And this is related to Senate Bill 525, which was passed 2 years ago, which is codified at 166-255. Legislature passed that Senate Bill 525, which prohibits possession of firearms by persons subject to qualifying protection orders and those persons convicted of misdemeanor crimes of domestic violence. Passage of that bill was incredibly important. To effectuate prohibition of firearms under the statute, we encourage prosecutors to fill out and courts to sign firearms findings document when persons are convicted of misdemeanor crimes of domestic violence. What's really important, however, is after the court signs those orders, we need those findings entered in the law enforcement data system so that officers who later contact these individuals will be able to receive notification about prohibition. It's an officer safety issue, a public and victim safety issue, and an enforcement of laws issue. If I may just have 10 seconds, Chair, the problem is that there is no current statute authorizing or mandating entry. So I encourage you, when you get Dash 5, to support passage of that, and I thank you for your efforts on this issue.
All right, thank you.
Chairman Brzezinski and members of the committee, I'm Andy Harris from North Portland. I'm here supporting SB 797 and SB 868 on behalf of Oregon Center for Christian Voices and also Oregon's Physicians for Social Responsibility. We speak up for some of the most vulnerable members of our society. According to the New York Times, each week, 10 women in the U.S. are shot to death by their husbands, boyfriends, or former dating partners. Here in Oregon, over 2,000 Oregonians were killed by firearms between 2010 and 2014, the vast majority by suicide. In 2016, the American Medical Association and OHSU declared that gun violence in the United States is a public health epidemic. We favor closing the Charleston loophole and giving state police sufficient time to run a background check on buyers of firearms. We believe the dating partners convicted of domestic violence should be denied access to firearms, just like couples who are married or living together. For those of us who are physicians, we have witnessed the terrible destruction of gun-induced injuries in our emergency departments. Firearms have no business in the hands of people who are unstable or who are acting out impulsively. Senate Bill 797 and SB 868 are two important steps toward curbing the epidemic of gun violence. They are common sense, pragmatic, and balanced measures, and we ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Przanski and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, thank you so much for this opportunity to testify today. My name is Kelly Campbell, and I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. We're the Oregon chapter of an international organization of health professionals committed to protecting human life from the gravest threats to health and survival. And as part of that organization, we shared in the Nobel Peace Prize for our work for nuclear disarmament. We represent more than 2,000 members throughout the state of Oregon who care deeply about the health of our communities and believe we must employ sound public policy to protect public health. Gun violence has reached epidemic proportions in our state and in our nation. In fact, the American Medical Association has declared gun violence to be a public health crisis. We have an alarming situation here in Oregon with a gun death rate that's greater than the national average. From 2010 to 2014, more than 2,000 people in Oregon died from firearms injuries, with suicide accounting for more than half of those deaths. Fortunately, common sense prevention measures such as Senate Bill 797 and Senate Bill 868 can help get this epidemic under control. By voting for these bills today, know that you will be saving lives. Doctors, nurses, and other health professionals in Oregon understand the urgency of this issue and are speaking out for common sense gun control measures that protect public health. I'm submitting into the record today a letter signed by over 80 Oregon health professionals from across the state in the past week, urging you to pass Senate Bills 797 and 868 to protect the lives of Oregonians from gun violence. Evidence shows that other states that have bills like these save the lives of individuals in domestic violence situations and those who are at high risk of attempting suicide. So I urge you to listen to the advice of Oregon doctors, nurses, and other health professionals and support Senate Bills 797 and 868 to save the lives of your fellow Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much for coming forward. Our next panel, as I mentioned, is John Dalton, David Wagner, David Hill. And while they are coming up, our next panel after this will be Melissa Ray Pankurik, Melissa Kaiser, and Robert Yule. Gentlemen. Whoever would like to start.
I'll begin. My name's Dave Wagner. Good morning, Chairman, committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to talk here. I am speaking in opposition to these three measures, primarily because they don't really address crime. Criminals pay no attention to the laws, as was I saw last week where three young men drove a truck into a gun store, smashed out the counters, and stole hundreds of weapons. They're not going to do background checks. The weapons they dispose of, there will be no background checks on anybody involved in that. And there are millions of illegal weapons free in our society. I happen to have some legal weapons. I have a concealed handgun permit. I'm a law-abiding citizen. So the only real impact of this legislation will be on people like me. I underwent a background check, it's been several years ago, and within about 10 minutes, the store clerk said, well, you've been denied. And fortunately, I demanded the phone number for the people, the state police, who had decided that, and called them immediately. And even though they had my name and my address and my driver's license number and my social security number, they had confused me with someone else with a similar name. I got that straightened out immediately and went about my purchase of the weapon. In my estimation, none of these are going to do anything other than make it more difficult for law-abiding citizens to exercise their Second Amendment. I've heard some testimony saying that this is all constitutional. Well, the bill hasn't been passed or adjudicated, and so I, I don't believe that you can make a statement about whether something's constitutional or not. I would remind everybody that shall not be infringed is a part of our Constitution.
Thank you. Who'd like to go next?
My name is David Samuel Hill. It's been a week since I saw you last. I'd like to thank you for allowing me to give you your testimony today. I'm opposed to these three bills. I'd like to point out some facts that have been recently shared with me. France has four times higher per capita gun violence rate than the United States, and they have stricter gun laws. A year before and a year after guns were taken away in Australia, the suicide rate stayed the same. The mode of committing suicide changed. We need to be proactive in domestic violence and also to prevent suicide. It is a reactive approach to take the firearms. It may be smart in some cases, but in other cases, we may find ourselves stripping people of their rights where their rights should not be taken from them. That is very concerning. Another concern of mine is an unlimited avenue to delay somebody from purchasing a firearm. I take every necessary step to be legal. I have a CC, I have a concealed carry permit. I've taken all the steps possible, even the ones that are viewed questionably constitutional. I've even abided by those. But this new way of unlimited delay for a firearm purchase, this could really infringe upon the rights. And I ask you guys to say no until you guys correct the language of that bill. Just no on these three bills. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And John?
My name's John Dalton. Thank you for letting me testify. I'm from Polk County. We have timberland, and I'm spending a lot of time back on it and in places that are at least a half an hour from any response, if you could get cell service. So we're on our own. I have a concealed carry permit. I use it because I have long guns I keep in my truck. I don't carry a pistol, but because of the way the concealed carry permit works, I can use it. I don't have to worry if I go through Salem or Portland or Independence or some town that restricts access to your firearm in the cab of your pickup, because I have a concealed carry permit. I have a license. If you make it more difficult to get that license, not everybody packs a pistol, but some of us have it because it is proof that we are responsible individuals. And you've used that criteria, responsible individuals, and it's been successful in the past. There's no reason to change it. Yeah. I'm getting older. I've discovered that with age, there are certain drawbacks. You're not as physical as you used to be. I can be easily attacked by someone younger and stronger now. I can't defend myself physically the way I could when I was younger. But if I have a firearm, I am somewhat protected. If you make an obstruction to getting the concealed carry permit, you are limiting the defendability of the elderly. Think about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Gentlemen, thank you. Our next set of panel is Melissa Pankurik, Melissa Kaiser, and Robert Yule. While they're coming up, our next panel after that will be Jim Hoffman, Franklin, I believe it's Middleton, or Tun, and Patrick Griffin.
Good morning, Senator Chair Przanski and committee members. My name is Melissa Kaiser, and I'm representing the Moms Demand Action. And I wanted to talk a little bit about 868. and proposing it, and how it's not a fantasy at all, how it's very much a potential reality for many of us, and how current gun regulation is not enough, and we need to do more. I want to tell you a little bit about my reality quickly. On this past Christmas, my brother shot and killed his wife, Kate, my sister-in-law, and proceeded to shoot a state trooper. This was in Portland and in King City, and then proceeded to kill himself with a gun. The months leading up to that, he had been in a state of crisis. He had moved in with my parents. He had lost his job. He had been losing rights with he had two children. He has two children, a son, Andrew, who just celebrated his eighth birthday, and a daughter, Bryn, who just turned one. Anyway, in the months leading up to it, he had been in a state of crisis, and he was losing rights with his children. Had there been legislation in place, such as 868, my parents would have had the capabilities to do something, to do more. It's been in the back of our minds, as the family of somebody who has committed murder, what could we have done? What could we do? My 8-year-old celebrated, like I said, his birthday this past weekend, my 8-year-old nephew, Andrew, and he told me that he knew his daddy had bought a gun, and he wanted to know if he was responsible for his daddy buying that gun. And of course, we had a very long conversation, and he is not, but we could have done more. There's so many in this room that are worried about losing their time, if you wouldn't mind if I have a few more seconds, losing their time, losing their bumper stickers. I'm worried about others losing their lives the way we have lost our family members. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Melissa Ray Pancerek. Thank you for having me. I am a veteran, a pistol coach, and a recreational shooter, and it shouldn't be surprising that I'm testifying in support of Senate Bill 868. I served 9 years in the military, and I was a first responder on September 11th, standing in the rubble of what was the Pentagon. On December 11th, 2012, I survived a mass shooting in the Clackamas Mall. He fired 16 shots from an AR-15, killing two people and wounding a third. He pointed the gun in my face and pulled the trigger. His gun jammed, and he didn't know how to fix it. He went on to kill himself with a pistol. Unfortunately, that was not the first time that I faced the threat of gun violence. I got married while on active duty. When we moved in together, I found an AK-47 in the closet. My husband told me when his first wife left him, he took that gun and camped out in the backyard of the man he suspected of sleeping with her. There was more than one story of this nature. Simultaneously, I got a new boss at work while I was in the military. He and I got along well, I thought, and one night he tried to kiss me. I rejected his advances, but he continued to get worse and became violent. He grabbed me by my hair and slammed my head on a desk in front of other Marines. I didn't know who to turn to for help because he was the boss. My boss was buddies with our supervisors. And my husband, he might use that weapon in the closet. I knew my boss had a gun. He bragged about threatening his wife with it. I also felt the police couldn't help me because despite the clear danger, there was no legal way to remove the guns from this situation. Ultimately, I was able to remove myself from the situation and escape danger. But my story is sadly not unusual. When a person poses a threat to self or others with a gun, family members and law enforcement often see warning signs. We've seen other shootings, like at East La Vista in California, where a process like the Extreme Risk Protection Order could have addressed the situation before tragedy struck. And so far, luck has saved me from gun violence, but I shouldn't have to rely on luck. I should be able to count on our laws. So I'm asking you to please support Senate Bill 868 before my luck runs out.
Thank you. Robert.
Senator Brzezinski, Chair Members, thank you for allowing me to testify today. I'm in support of Senate Bill 868. I am Robert Yule. I'm the founding board member for Gun Owners for Responsible Ownership and a member of the Advisory Committee for Oregon Coalition for Common Sense. I am also a veteran, a gun owner, a registered nurse, and I carry a CHL. Gun violence is a public health crisis, and the most effective approach to public health safety is through prevention. Senate Bill 868 will prevent death and injury. Most people think of homicides when they hear the term gun violence. But statistically, data, excuse me, for Oregon from 2010 through 2014 indicates that a large majority, nearly 90%, 87%, of the gun deaths actually occur by suicide. Other states have seen similar trends and have acted to correct this alarming issue. California enacted an extreme risk protective law in 2014, and Washington voters passed the same type of law last November with an overwhelmingly majority. Tragically, we have learned from previous events around the country that family and law enforcement are often aware that someone may be in danger to themselves or others before any violence occurs, but have lacked the tools needed to appropriately address the issue. Senate Bill 868 would allow families and household members to work with law enforcement to temporarily remove guns and prevent the purchase of new guns by individuals who pose a high risk of harm to themselves or to others. It would provide time to de-escalate a crisis and serve as a pathway for suicide prevention. Some might argue that there is potential for these protective orders to be abused, but this bill is based on the current and long-standing procedure of domestic violence protective orders, which require that clear, cogent, and convincing evidence be presented to a judge to determine whether an individual is a risk to themselves or others. In addition, the subject of the order will have the opportunity to refute the present evidence and protective order. Sorry. Right.
Thank you very much. No questions, so thank you very much. Our next panel, as I mentioned, is Jim Hoffman. I believe it's Franklin Middleton and Patrick Griffin. After that, because of our time, I'm going to call up one individual from the supporters. We had a number of people, 3.5 pages of supporters. In opposition, we had just over a page and a half. And I'll call up the last two individuals on the opposition with one of the proponents as well at that for the last panel. Gentlemen.
Thank you for the opportunity to get up here and speak. I'm a lifelong, almost a lifelong Oregon resident. I'm also the chairman for Clatsop County GOP. My name is Jim Hoffman. I'm a veteran. I worked for the Oregon Department of Corrections. I've seen firsthand the violence in the prison system, what happens on the streets and in the military. It comes from not only weapons, but it comes from screwdrivers, hammers, people hang themselves, and cliffs. I've seen one person jump off a cliff. I've known another to drive off a cliff in suicide. We don't need more gun laws. We have the laws already protecting us. Judge Jeanine Pirro, she's been a federal prosecutor, federal judge. She stated that out of thousands of cases that she's dealt with with weapons, there's only been one person that had a legal weapon that used it to hurt somebody else. Criminals don't care about our laws. They will get weapons no matter what. If somebody wants to commit suicide, do you think if we take away their right to have a gun, it's going to stop them? No, it's not. We need to quit attacking the weapons and start dealing with the problems. I mean, we have problems with gangs. Sure we do. But where are those gangs coming from? A vast majority of them are MS-13. They come from Mexico. The vast majority of them are here illegally. Why aren't we doing something about that? You know, we have the means and the abilities to already protect our citizens, but attacking our gun rights is not something we need to do. Thank you.
Thank you for allowing me to speak today, Chair Pozanski and the Chair. Thank you so much for the service that you give to our state. I'm a Republican PCP in Eugene, and Senator Pozanski, you're
mine. And your name?
Patrick Griffin, sorry.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to speak a little bit differently than has been heard so far. In the 1830s, the state of Missouri disarmed my spiritual ancestors and drove them from the state. I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. In the 1840s, the governor of Illinois guaranteed the leader of our church protection and allowed him to be murdered in custody. So as you can see from historical perspective, I'm disinclined to trust state government to protect my rights to defend myself. Personally, as a child and when I was in elementary school, my third grade teacher said, "Why can't you be boys more like Patrick?" Because I was a good student, which translated in, I got beat up every day after school. When me and my mother went to the principal to discuss this, his words were, as long as it's off school property, I don't care. So I personally do not wish to trust my self-defense to people in authority. On another note, one time when I was a teenager in my home, someone broke into my home. I heard them in the other room. I was the only one home, and I listed through my mind how I might deal with this particular situation. Somebody was in the home at the time. There was no time for me to call and hope, you know, wait for however long it was going to take the police to show up. So I ran through, you know, hey, go to the kitchen, get a kitchen knife. Oh, I had a baseball bat, and then I remembered my family has at the time had an AR-15. I used the AR-15 to successfully defend my home. I did not have to shoot anyone. The gun scared the crap out of this kid, and he left. He was just in my home to steal something, but, you know, luckily, he was only there to take things. So that's my particular, I'm opposed to these bills because I just don't trust the state to make judgments on how I can defend myself. Thank you.
Thank you.
Franklin Middleton, 13790 Southwest Far Vista Street, Beaverton, here for myself. On Senate Bill 868, it sounds to me like we don't need another layer of laws. One of the problems is, like people said before, there's so many laws that it's tough for lawyers to figure out what's going on. And judges are different. If you look at Gorsuch situation, we know that there are two political parties in Oregon that have a problem with judges. On 797, to me, that is a way that the state can underfund an activity like the state police to make it harder for delays to increase. My opinion is that women are more likely to be beaten physically than they are shot. One of my problems was rape kits. The Oregon State Police weren't adequately funded in order to process all the rape kits that were given to them. On 764, I suggested to my Representative Helm, I believe, that people ought to take a course before they are allowed a gun, because even the military doesn't give you a gun without giving you a practice. So you need a driver's license to drive a two-ton weapon. You might as well have one for a gun, so that at least you know what downrange is. Thank you.
All right, thank you. This is what we're going to do. We're running out of time. I have two more individuals who signed up on the opposition side, so I'm going to call up two people for the proponent side. That will be Marilyn Balchek, okay, and then Dr. Jim Scott. If you two will come up, and this will conclude the proponents, and then the last two for the opponents will be the last two that are signed up, John Grandstaff, as well as Manuel Martinez. Please get started.
Hello, my name is Marilyn Balserac, and I was the citizen sponsor for Initiative 1491 in Washington State to enact extreme risk protection orders, which was on our ballot last November and passed by overwhelming numbers across the state. I'm here to speak about SB 868, a similar measure before you today. First, I would like to say this is not a Democrat or a Republican bill. This is a much-needed tool that families of loved ones in crisis need. This is a bill about preventing suicide, and who is more attuned to someone's psychological needs than close family? I cannot put into words the agony of knowing a loved one is in crisis and not being able to keep a gun out of that person's hands. My son struggled off and on his entire life with social and psychological problems. The last 2 years of his life was an endless series of suicide notes, bizarre text messages, and even one night pounding on our door screaming, yes or no, can I commit suicide, yes or no, I'll give you 10 seconds to answer. I'd given him the best health care I could find, but unfortunately, psychological research is in its infancy, and long-term commitment is often not practical nor affordable. I talked with police officers on several occasions to see if there was any way to keep a gun out of his hands, but the answer was always the same. He can legally buy a gun unless he commits a crime or I get a restraining order and he breaks that order. That was the last thing I wanted to do. My son needed me and my help. I so desperately felt I needed to keep a gun from him. Guns, unlike overdosing or suffocation, are a uniquely lethal means of suicide. So I was left to search his room whenever he was not around and pray the help would come before he made a decision that would be irreversible. It was not to be. On June 7th, 2015, James took a gun that he had purchased from our local Fred Meyer, a store where I had taught him how to shop and socialize, went up to his stepdaughter's room and shot her in the head, and a short time later shot and killed himself. This need not happen. If extreme risk protection orders had been available to me, I believe my son and stepdaughter, the daughter that I never had, would still be alive today.
Thank you.
I wish that you would vote for that. Thank you.
Jim?
Thank you, Senator Brzezinski and the committee. I'm Dr. Jim Scott. I've been a physician in Oregon I'm an Oregon native and have been a physician for over 40 years. And I'm here to speak in favor of 797 and 868. You've heard a lot of outstanding testimony this morning. I'm just going to underline a little bit of that. One of the things that has informed my experience of this is that when I was in practice down in Florence on the coast for 20 years, I got asked to be the medical examiner in the local community and kind of an assistant to the guy over in Eugene. And I thought I was going to get to do some interesting Quincy kind of work of tough cases, but basically it was all suicides or an old person who died in bed at home. And those suicides several of them, when I would talk to family members, they'd say, we knew something was wrong, but we didn't know what to do. We couldn't do anything about it. And this bill, 868, will provide a tool, not universally effective, but maybe if it saves a few lives, it'll matter. If we take gun violence prevention as a public health problem, which my organization, the National Physicians Alliance, has been talking about for now over a decade, there are multiple interventions that may make a difference. Just like when with car safety, we've had one thing after another that has gradually made automobiles much more safe, and the same thing can happen with guns. So I urge you to support these two bills and hopefully save some lives in this state. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. Our last panel is John Grandstaff. John?
Yes.
Come on up. And Manuel Martinez. John, I'd like for you to start off, please.
Sure, I'd love to.
Go ahead and get your name and got it. John?
Yes.
You're ready.
Yes, my name is John Grandstaff. Can you hear me? My name is John Grandstaff, and I'm testifying against all three of these bills. I just want to say thank you very much for springing this on us when most people have to go to work. That's much appreciated. So I'm opposed to these bills because on their face, they're just a blatant power grab, and they're unconstitutional for many reasons, Second Amendment, Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment. I think I'm very disgusted, actually, with anybody who would support these bills, and I'm disgusted for two reasons. First of which, it's ignorance. Anybody who's for these bills are obviously ignorant and have not done enough research to understand the constitutionality of these bills, the unconstitutionality of these bills. And secondly, too, anybody who votes for them in the Senate or the House are breaking their oath of office. And so we've hired you, especially you, Mr. Brzezinski, to defend the Constitution. And over and over and over again, you have chosen to break your oath. and that's not appreciated. And I think that everybody here should understand that, that anybody who votes for these bills are breaking their oath of office. And you, by doing that, are becoming a criminal. And furthermore, I'd say shame on the state police or the county sheriffs for not arresting you for that crime. So the people that vote against these bills, I do appreciate it, because you understand the Constitution and your job in defending our rights as citizens of Oregon.
What about my rights?
Please respect everyone's opportunity. John, thank you very much for your time. Daniel?
My name is Manuel Martinez. Reside in Kaiser, state of Oregon. And I oppose all these bills. Not for the reason that you try to represent, it's because you hide the purpose of this bill, which is the elimination and the destruction of the Second Amendment of the United States of America, the one who protects our liberties and rights. I know that. You know also that, but you love it. This is nothing more to start introducing Marxism in this country, which will be started long time ago. You want to disarm the American people. You want to leave the door open to tyranny. I know tyranny very, very much. When you still was feeding from your mothers, I was there. I know all this people with those t-shirts, they've been used by the pill of Marxism to introduce tyranny in this country. I feel sorry for them. Believe me, I am being used. I see these people with this same individuals with those t-shirts. Jesus for Christ, Christ for peace. Mom for peace. Mom for action. I saw before, I saw them wearing rosaries. And then they turned around and they said it was done that in purpose to introduce Marxism. I denounce in the way you conduct this. You are manipulating the law. You are manipulating the American people. You are introducing here Marxism. Probably in your body has the pill of Marxism, even though you don't want to recognize.
Mr. Martinez, thank you very much for your testimony.
I don't take any questions because my liberties and rights are not subject to your questions, sir.
We're not going
to thank
you
very
questions.
Much for your time.
You better have a good day.
You bet.
So I'd like to thank everyone that was here today. I'm sorry that we only had the time allotted. There are a number of supporters who did sign up. There's about two pages of individuals. But as we stated when we had these posted, we knew we were going to be on a limited amount of time. That's why we left it at 2 minutes for each person. You still have till 5 p.m. today. If you have not provided any testimony, you have the ability, no matter what issue on these three bills, you can submit it to the judiciary staff, or you can go online and upload it electronically. Again, thank you very much for being Oregonians, listening to everyone's perspectives, and now we're adjourned. One's perspectives, and now we're adjourned.